Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, July 25th, 2024. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Community, Heart of Decatur, Northeast Community Fund Celebrates 55th Anniversary by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Northeast Community Fund started in Jerry Pelz's garage with a dream of helping people in need. St. John's Lutheran Church, some community partners, and Pell's tireless commitment helped the ministry grow into the large social service agency it is today, 55 years later. Back in July 1969, our organization was started with one food basket, said Paul Liddy, Director of Fundraising and Development, and we have grown into the amazing organization we are today. We decided to do a celebration to honor the legacy of the organization as well as appreciate the community. At the end of the day, we are a community-based organization, and it's nice to have any of the individuals who give their time, talent, or treasure, and the individuals who use our services, just to give them a thank you. St. John's used to be located on Orchard Street, just a few blocks from the organization's current home at 839 North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, which houses a food bank, clothing room, services such as small repairs of homes, especially for seniors who need a sidewalk fixed or a ramp for accessibility, a microfinance program for individuals who have gotten into payday loans or have an immediate financial need, and a partnership with Hope Academy that provides training and education for parents of students. I always say that we're the heart of Decatur, Liddy said. We bring a lot of services together to help meet the needs of the individuals that need the most help in a caring and humanistic and Christ-like manner. The organization is still one of the outreach ministries of St. John's Lutheran Church, among other supporting partners, said the Reverend Aaron Bird, pastor of the church. Once a month, Bird visits to pray with and encourage volunteers, and the church provides volunteer hours and financial support. Pelz is now retired, but his name is on the building in honor of his work for many years. Lisa Brockle is one of the organization's clients, and she said she visits regularly and is grateful it exists. We come here to get the food bank and the clothing, she said. The current location is so much bigger and better. The other one was so small, you couldn't hardly get around. Executive Director Angel Lawrence, who seems to know each client personally, was all over the grounds during the celebration, laughing and talking with everyone. They could go anywhere, but they choose to come here and let us serve them, she said. We're thankful for that. This article is accompanied by two full-color photographs attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first is captioned, Daily Algorin builds a dinosaur skeleton from the Children's Museum of Illinois with her sons Ethan Lopez, 2, and Liam Algorin, 5, during the Northeast Community Fund's 55th anniversary celebration in Decatur on Wednesday. They do a lot of help, said Algorin, who moved to the neighborhood recently. The second photo is captioned, Executive Director Angel Lawrence pitches in during the Northeast Community Fund's 55th anniversary celebration in Decatur on Wednesday. Lawrence said the event is a way to say thank you to the community. Environment. Report. Inland counties bear brunt of bad weather. By Seth Borenstein, Associated Press. Floyd County keeps flooding and the federal government keeps coming to the rescue. In July 2022, at least 40 people died and 300 homes were damaged when the eastern Kentucky county flooded. It was the 13th time in 12 years that the rural county was declared a federal disaster. These are disasters so costly that local governments can't pay for it all. So the governor asks the president to declare a disaster to free up federal funds. After that flood, I had 500 homeless people looking at me. Judge, what are we going to do? Recalled Judge Robbie Williams, administrator for the county of just over 35,000 people. It's overwhelming, and it's just a matter of time before it happens again. It did. In 2023, Floyd County was declared a disaster again for the 14th time, starting in 2011. And Floyd County isn't even the nation's most disaster-prone county. Neighboring Johnson County has 15 disasters declared by the Federal Emergency Management Agency since 2011. When it comes to extreme weather and other so-called natural disasters, people generally look to the hurricane or earthquake-prone coasts and say that's where the danger is. But that's not where the highest concentration of federally declared disasters are, according to an atlas of 713 FEMA-declared disasters created by Rebuild by Design and New York University. While most people in disasters think about federal government direct financial help to individual victims to pay for lost housing and businesses, the atlas focuses on the $60 billion pot of FEMA aid to governments. 8 of the 9 counties with the most federal declared disasters since 2011, more than a dozen each, are in Kentucky, with the one in Vermont. These counties have 4 to 5 times the number of disasters as the national average of 3 in the past 13 years. California and Louisiana, and I would say now even Texas, Florida for sure, they soak up all the oxygen when you hear about these giant storms, said Atlas creator Amy Chester, director of the disaster prevention-focused Rebuild by Design nonprofit group. But what you're not hearing about are these storms that are happening all the time, and that's just becoming, like, regular to places like Vermont. Chester also mentioned Tennessee, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Iowa, and Alaska as hotspots. We want to show that climate change is already here, Chester said of the data, which covers 2011 to 2023, but doesn't include heat waves, drought, or COVID. Communities are suffering all over. Before she crunched the data, Chester said she figured Vermont would be a haven from climate change, cooler, inland. Instead, it's a disaster hotspot. It's awful, Chester said. It just keeps happening to them. Days after she said that, Vermont flooded again, this time from the remnants of Hurricane Beryl. Flooding is the most common disaster in the United States, according to FEMA. Since 2011, FEMA handed out more than $41 billion in aid following hurricanes, the most of any disaster type. What the data tell us is that the frequency and severity of disasters at local state scales is increasing, with rural, suburban, and urban places being affected nationwide. Susan Cutter, co-director of the Hazards Vulnerability and Resilience Institute at the University of South Carolina, said in an email. She wasn't part of Chester's research. More needs to be done to enhance resilience to reduce their impacts on people. The largest county in the nation that has not had a federally declared disaster since 2011 is Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, where the city of Charlotte is. We've been blessed, said Charlotte Emergency Management Chief Robert Graham, who attributes the lack of disasters to good luck, good government, and good geography. We are protected from the coast somewhat, Graham said of the inland county. We don't get all the impacts from the mountains. Charlotte seems to be in a somewhat of a sweet spot. Graham said a cushy reserve fund and planning have prevented the city from having to go to the federal government for financial help after disasters like a 2019 flood. But he said he knows it's only a matter of time before the city's luck runs out. Luck long abandoned East Kentucky. In Floyd County, geography and government regulations make it tough, Williams said. The mountain-heavy county has people living in the narrow valley floor in old coal camps, he said. And when it rains, the ever-shallower creeks overflow. We're seeing historic levels of flooding, Williams said. It's only getting worse. Environmental regulations won't let local officials dredge the creeks, which keep getting built up with silt coming down the mountains, often from development, Williams said. Some creeks decades ago were 20 feet deep, but are now shallow enough to walk across, he said. The problem is there's nowhere for the rain to go, Williams said. National Weather Service data shows that Floyd County now averages more than 50 inches of rain a year, up from 42 to 43 inches a year in the mid-1980s. Warmer air holds more moisture, with studies and statistics showing the eastern United States is not only getting more rain, but more intense downpours that cause floods. Floyd County's government received more than $35 million in FEMA disaster aid since 2011. That's not even near the top, where the big money went to places devastated by hurricanes. Five counties, three of them in New York, received more than $1 billion in FEMA aid, led by Manhattan's New York County, which got $8.9 billion, nearly all of it due to 2012's Hurricane Sandy. All of the top five counties were struck by one or more hurricanes. History. Secret Service protection evolved. How Protecting the President Has Changed Over Years, by Rebecca Santana, Associated Press, Washington. During Abraham Lincoln's presidency, anyone could come to the White House and see him. Come they did. Mothers looking to have their sons released from military service. Wives urging that their husbands be freed from prison after resisting the draft. Others simply wanting to meet the president. Some only wanted comfort in a terrible time, and that he freely gave, James B. Conroy wrote in his book, Lincoln's White House, The People's House in Wartime. The world vastly changed since the 1860s, and so has protection for presidents. Protective details grew in size, responsibility, and technology over more than a century of the Secret Service protecting presidents. When presidents leave the White House, they are accompanied by Secret Service officers and agents. Cars can no longer drive past what is often dubbed the People's House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The fence was raised, and don't even try to get past the gate without an appointment or badge. During the Civil War, Lincoln was hesitant to make the White House look like an armed camp. But in late 1864, several police officers were assigned to guard him, the White House Historical Association said. President Franklin Pierce was the first to have a full-time bodyguard in 1853. It wasn't until 1901, after President William McKinley was assassinated, that Congress asked the Secret Service, originally a Treasury Department division that went after counterfeiters, to protect the commander-in-chief. Since then, protective details grew and evolved, often in response to assassinations, close calls, or other major security events. The number of people under guard also grew, as vice presidents, former presidents, candidates, family members, and more now get protection. Former Secret Service agents say the agency is studying the attempt on former President Donald Trump's life at a rally in Pennsylvania this month and making changes to adjust to it. The attempt to kill President Ronald Reagan in 1981 is often cited as a turning point in how the Secret Service operates. Reagan was coming out of the Washington Hilton Hotel when John Hinckley Jr. opened fire from a crowd of onlookers and journalists just 15 feet away. Hinckley got off six shots before Secret Service officers tackled him. The last shot ricocheted off a limo and into Reagan. Some of the changes that followed aren't so obvious to the outside observer, but still critical. For example, the Secret Service started assigning an agent to the small group of reporters who travel with the president so they would know when someone was infiltrating the group. After Reagan's shooting, presidents also were driven into buildings through underground parking garages. When that's not possible, a cover is erected around the entrance to obstruct the line of sight as the president gets into or out of a vehicle. Nobody walks through the front door anymore, said retired supervisory Secret Service agent Bobby McDonald, now a criminal justice lecturer at the University of New Haven. Presidents and protectees of the Secret Service have seen more loading docks and have walked through more kitchens than ever before. Joseph LaSorsa, a retired Secret Service agent who served from 1976 to 1996 and was on Reagan's protective detail, said the post-Reagan era also saw the increased use of metal detectors for crowds approaching the president to eliminate the possibility of a weapon getting into the secure area around the leader. Changes also followed the assassination of John F. Kennedy in 1963 as he drove through Dallas in a convertible, former agents say. Presidents no longer sit in open vehicles, but wave to onlookers through the thick glass of a heavily armored limousine nicknamed the Beast. Former agents also say the focus on advance work before trips increased significantly, and more was done to secure routes taken by the motorcades. There were also changes at the White House. On one day in May 1995, an estimated 26,000 cars drove along Pennsylvania Avenue past the building. The next day, workers stacked concrete barriers at each end to cut off access. Mounting security concerns a month after the Oklahoma City bombing at a federal building prompted the closure. There were other changes too, such as air traffic restrictions after a small plane crashed into the White House lawn in 1994. Gunfire hit the mansion twice that same year. Then President Bill Clinton said closing the street was necessary to protect it, but vowed that people's access to the White House and their president would not be impeded. He even vowed that protesters would still have the right to walk up to the White House property. Many still do. Thomas Jefferson first encircled the White House with a wooden post and rail fence around 1801. He replaced that with a stone wall by 1808. To deter fence jumpers, sharp metal points were installed in 2015, and later the height doubled to roughly 13 feet. Under that later renovation, the space between the bars got slightly wider, just enough to allow a wee or naughty child to squeeze through. While people can still visit the White House, they must request tours through their congressional member and submit their identification information to the Secret Service ahead of time. Paul Eckloff, a retired Secret Service agent who served on details protecting three presidents during his 23-year career, said he often hears people say the president shouldn't do outdoor rallies or should be kept away from people. As an agent, Eckloff said he always considered his job not as protecting the person, but the office of the presidency. If I woke up in a country where the President of the United States stayed in the castle, never engaged with the voters, no common American ever had a chance to see him, I wouldn't consider my sacrifice worthy, he said. Macon County Courts. Convicted killer faces life in prison. Robinson found guilty of murder in Arion McClellan death, by Tony Reed, Decatur. Convicted killer Deontay A. Robinson faces the prospect of spending the rest of his life in prison for the murder of one Decatur victim and also opening fire on the victim's brother. The 27-year-old brother, Jarvis J. McClellan, would survive unscathed and help identify Robinson as the shooter. McClellan's sibling, Arion L. McClellan, 24, suffered fatal wounds after being hit multiple times, including a bullet wound to the head, in the early morning hours of August 14, 2022, outside a bar in the 1100 block of West Wood Street. Surgeons fought to save him, but McClellan would lose his fight for life at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Robinson, one of three suspects charged in the crime, had opted for a bench trial that lasted 3 days before Macon County Circuit Court presiding judge Thomas Griffith. The trial wrapped up Tuesday, with the judge finding Robinson guilty of murder and also guilty of the aggravated discharge of a gun in the attempt to shoot the older brother. The convictions mean he's looking at a sentencing range of 20 to 60 years on the murder, plus a 15-year enhancement because a gun was used, the sentence to be served at 100%. The aggravated discharge conviction carries a term of 4 to 15 years to be served at 85%. And both sentences must run consecutively to each other. Robinson is being held in the Macon County Jail and will be sentenced on September 10th. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said both sibling victims had been in the parking lot next to a bar when Robinson and alleged accomplices Omari C. Walker and Kyle Esco, both aged 20, opened fire. Walker and Esco denied charges of murder and the aggravated discharge of a gun. Walker, found and arrested March 4, 2023, was granted pretrial release on February 15. Esco remains jailed, and both defendants are due back in court for pretrial hearings August 8. Commenting after Tuesday's guilty verdict for Robinson, Macon County State's Attorney Scott Reuter praised the work of his prosecutors, Assistant State's Attorneys Brian Shaw and Thomas Wheeler. Obviously, a good outcome for this office, said Reuter. But the important thing is it's a better outcome for the mother of the deceased. Bringing her justice is what is really important in cases like this. Rock Island Milan School District. Dace has new job after delays. Decatur Assistant Superintendent taking Quad Cities Area Post by Olivia Allen. After two postponements, the Rock Island Milan School Board has hired Jeff Dace as the district's first deputy superintendent. On a 5-2 vote, Dace will assume the position for the 2024-25 school year at a salary just over $174,209. Dace comes from the Decatur School District, where he currently serves as Assistant Superintendent of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, one of several leadership positions he has held in the community since April 2019. Board members Gary Rowe and Jason Rosler voted against the appointment. Numerous individuals in the community have expressed their opposition to the proposed deputy superintendent, Rowe said, calling the position unnecessary from a functional standpoint. The board was initially set to hire Dace at the regular school board meeting on Tuesday, June 11th. Due to a mistake with his and other recommended hires' salary documents, the vote was initially rescheduled to a special meeting on Tuesday, June 27th. The district official said that vote was then postponed to iron out details of its leadership staff, leading to Tuesday's vote. Dace wasn't present at Tuesday's meeting, as Superintendent Sharon Williams said he was at a National Center for Education Statistics conference. According to the district's job posting, the deputy superintendent would serve as an extension of the superintendent. The position will drive organizational effectiveness, provide leadership and strategic direction for Rock Island Milan priorities, initiatives, and other areas, the listing stated. Williams said the rationale behind this new position was to ensure that central office leaders, principals, and teachers are well supported as these major goals are acted upon. Trump shooting. FBI offers laptop details. Gunman looked up the Kennedy assassination. Cased stage with drone. By Eric Tucker, Associated Press, Washington. The gunman in the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump is believed to have done a Google search 1 week before the shooting of how far away was Oswald from Kennedy, FBI Director Christopher Wray said Wednesday, revealing new details about a suspect he said took a keen interest in public figures, but otherwise didn't leave behind clear clues of an ideological motive. The July 6th search, recovered from a laptop tied to Thomas Matthew Crooks, 20, is a reference to Lee Harvey Oswald, the shooter who killed President John F. Kennedy from a sniper's perch in Dallas on November 22, 1963. That is a search that is significant in terms of his state of mind. That is the same day that it appears he registered for the Trump rally scheduled for July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania, Ray told the House Judiciary Committee. The FBI is investigating the shooting, which killed one rallygoer and seriously injured two others, as an act of domestic terrorism. A Secret Service countersniper killed Crooks after the attempt. The FBI's assessment is that Crooks acted alone. The agency built out a detailed timeline of Crooks' movements and online activity, but the precise motive, or why Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, was singled out, remains elusive, Ray said. A lot of the usual repositories of information have not yielded anything notable in terms of motive or ideology, Ray said. Ray noted that Crooks grew interested in public officials. Besides Trump, Crooks also had photos on his phone of Democratic President Joe Biden and other prominent figures, and in the days before the shooting appeared particularly consumed by Trump. Crooks is believed to have visited the rally site a week before the event, staying for about 20 minutes, and then returned on the morning of the rally. About 2 hours before the shooting, Ray said, Crooks flew a drone about 200 yards from the rally for about 11 minutes, using the device to live stream and watch footage, and obtained what Ray said would have been a rear view mirror of the scene behind him. The drone and a controller were recovered from Crooks' car. On the afternoon of the rally, Crooks attracted law enforcement scrutiny because of odd behavior around the edges of the event, including shouldering a backpack and peering into the lens of a rangefinder toward the rooftops behind the stage where Trump would stand within the hour. Climate change. Monday breaks world heat record. Scientists in Europe report previous high was set the day before by Sibu Arasu and Seth Borenstein, Associated Press. Monday was the hottest day ever globally, beating a record set the day before, as countries around the world continue to feel the heat, according to the European Climate Change Service. Provisional satellite data published by Copernicus on Wednesday shows that Monday was 0.1 degree Fahrenheit hotter than Sunday. Climate scientists say it's plausible that this is the warmest it has been in 120,000 years because of human-caused climate change. While scientists cannot be certain that Monday was the very hottest day throughout that period, average temperatures have not been this high since long before humans developed agriculture. But it's a difficult determination to make, said University of Pennsylvania climate scientist Michael Mann, because data from tree rings, corals, and ice cores don't go back that far. The temperature rise in recent decades is in line with what climate scientists projected would happen if humans kept burning fossil fuels at an increasing rate. We're in an age where weather and climate records are frequently stretched beyond our tolerance levels, resulting in insurmountable loss of lives and livelihoods, said Roxy Matthew Cole, a climate scientist at the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology. Deaths from high temperatures show how catastrophic it is not to take stronger action on cutting CO2, Cornell University climate scientist Natalie Mahowald said in an email. Copernicus's preliminary data shows the global average temperature Monday was 62.87 degrees Fahrenheit. The previous record before this week was set just a year ago. Before last year, the previous recorded hottest day was in 2016, when average temperatures were at 62.24 degrees Fahrenheit. Copernicus records go back to 1940, but other measurements by the US and UK governments began in 1880. Without human-caused climate change, scientists say extreme temperature records would not be broken nearly as frequently as has happened in recent years. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 25th, 2024. Please stay tuned.